Enviro is an award-winning recycling company committed to recycling plastic in a way that encompasses every strand of the circular economy. By merging social impact with technology innovation, we can create a better environment, both for today and for future generations. I'm Becca Smith from Enviro, and this podcast aims to make sense of recycling. In this episode, our founder and CEO, Ahmed Detta, speaks with Olivia Siboney, Head of Impact Investment at Seed Tribe, about sustainable investments and goals, and why the UK should be leading the transformation of the recycling industry. Liv, thanks for being here today. Explain a bit about your background and what you've done as an entrepreneur.
Sure, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. So in terms of my background, I come from a corporate background. I've actually sort of meandered my way through public, private and third sector, and then took the leap, leaving Goldman Sachs after being there for 7 years to become an entrepreneur. I ran a food tech platform for 5 years, which I exited until I launched my current business, Seed Tribe. And I'd say the key thing in terms of my learnings as an entrepreneur is the fact that I feel very strongly that business needs to be used as a force for good. And now there are so many incredible ways that business can address some of the world's greater social and environmental challenges. And I did the mistake of not integrating that into my business model in my first business. And that was probably my greatest learning, because I fell out of love with the mission that I was on and was moving further and further away from my passion. So my biggest learning as a result with my entrepreneurial journey is coming into Seed Tribe, really understanding that for me, integrating profit and purpose is non-negotiable. And that has been my greatest lesson to carry me and to work with all of the entrepreneurs that I now work with.
And how did you get into founding Seed Tribe? Can you just explain a bit about what it does?
Sure, of course. So I founded Seed Tribe after leaving my previous business, Scrub Club. And as mentioned, it was sort of very, very much driven by this need to just be fully engaged in how we can address some of these social and environmental challenges. The Sustainable Development Goals have recently been announced, so I was very much inspired by those. It's actually a spin-off of a larger organisation called the Angel Investment Network. And I actually knew the founders. They had personally invested in my previous company. I'd raised money through Angel Investment Network. And we were really keen to essentially set up another sister company, which really focused very much on that particular side of just problem solving social and environmental challenges.
Great. And you mentioned the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Can you just explain a bit about them and why they were so important in giving Seed Tribe some framework to work with?
Absolutely. So part of it is actually I'm a little bit too much of a yes person, and I tend to possibly get influenced by someone's argument, and I realise that that is not the way to judge whether a business is truly good or bad. And I'd been working, I'm on the board at UCL of an organisation that enables entrepreneurs to use the Sustainable Development Goals in their business model. So I'd been working with the SDGs, as we call them, for a little while, and I certainly realised that actually, rather than me being the master of the decisions on what is good and bad, actually globally 17 great targets have been agreed by pretty much every country in the world. So it really made sense for me not to use my own judgment, but actually use the globally agreed ones. And these are the most pressing challenges that we do need to address globally.
What a great framework to work with. I know that Ahmed, Enviro, you have clearly set out which Sustainable Development Goals and Enviro sort of works towards. Can you explain them?
Absolutely. So we form part of the SDGs as part of our strategy, predominantly because sustainability, corporate social responsibility is so new. It's still forming its legislations, and everybody has their own opinion on what sustainability is. For me personally, sustainability is about longevity and having solutions for the long term, but other people would have different opinions. So therefore, the SDGs unites us all together in making the collaborative difference, both at a macro level. And for us, we've looked at a number of the goals. One of the SDGs is number 8, which is the decent work and economic growth. With the work that we're doing, both with the governments, grant applications, looking at apprentice programs, but also on the wider scale of hopefully being able to rehabilitate some of the less fortunate members of our society, that formed a really, really important area that we can align with, and that is recognized by everybody else. Another one is responsible consumption and production. Ultimately, that's what we're doing. We're encouraging people to recycle, become more conscious of their waste and how they recycle. As a business, we're not just going to be a facility that produces recycled material, but it's all about changing behavioral habits that waste is eliminated. We're conscious of it, but also we've got an easy solution. So we're really advocating responsible consumption for consumers and helping them recycle with ease, because right now, every council's got a different structure. It's all disparate. And, you know, my parents have four recycling bins where I live. In Wandsworth, we have one bin and we put our recyclables on the side. But every Wednesday night, we have to, you know, avoid the foxes tearing them to shreds. So it's like, you know, how do you become more responsible? How do you make this easy so you don't get frustrated? So that's part of the production. And then ultimately, we're looking at climate action. Every piece of plastic that we stop going to landfill or the ocean is making a huge difference, either in the emissions or disintegration into marine life. And that naturally kind of continues on to, you know, life below water, because we all know that a PET plastic bottle will take up to 400 years to disintegrate if it's thrown out on the street, but once it hits water, it's gone within a year. So we really need to stop that. So we feel that these are, you know, four major goals that we can make a tangible and active contribution to, and has helped develop the corporate DNA of Enviro.
Amazing. And Liv, I'm just interested, like, looking at the SDGs. You've worked for CGI for a number of years now. Some of the companies you've worked with, are there any SDGs that people don't align with as much, or are there any SDGs that are really difficult to attain?
Yes. There are definitely some that are easier than others. So as a broad categorization, the environmental ones are a lot more popular than the social ones. That's very, very broadly. Partly because I think there's a number, this sort of perfect storm, which is the fact that we're increasingly aware of climate change. And this is, you know, it's a very, very uniting global problem, which enables us to sort of have better collaboration internationally. The other thing is, quite simply, there are actually, I guess, as we see this growing fear, there's a lot of demand for these kind of products. So actually, there's a lot better opportunity to provide good business models linked to anything relating to climate action, or the seas, or anything sort of anything environmentally related. I would say the ones that are that I see the least often, sadly, from a sort of purely commercial perspective, is anything around, you know, reducing poverty, financial inclusion. The inequalities, I would say, are more challenging. Same with gender equality. So a lot of people look to address gender equality, but I wouldn't say that's part of their business model, because again, it's not the most obvious way to commercialize. So environmental first. I'd say the other one that is sort of high on the agenda is SDG 3, which is health related, both physical and increasingly mental health as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think mental health is something that now has become at the forefront. I think people are no longer shunning, you know, meditation or yoga, or people are coming forward to say, actually, I'm not in a good mood, I'm not having a good day, so give me the space to sort myself out and I will be back on form. And I think that stigma is slowly eradicating. I think that's one of the positives of COVID, that we're open to talk about the challenges and the vulnerabilities, and actually, you know, life at home has been difficult, rather than moaning, but actually saying, well, these are the challenges I've faced, and actually I'm looking forward to changing that. So I think that's slowly come out of COVID, but you're right, I agree with you on the gender equality. Whilst in Enviro we've got a gender equal board, how we would deliver that within the actual manufacturing space is something that's a question that we are addressing all the time. Management team level, I think we've achieved that, and we're led by a female chair, and we have equal board members of male and female, but moving forward when we're operational, I'd love to reflect that, how that's going to be an interesting question that we're looking to address.
Do you know, it's really interesting that you mention those two aspects, because actually I think, as you say, absolutely, COVID has really, really brought to the forefront the importance of mental health. Mm. And interestingly, when you work for a purposeful organisation, actually, I think that is firstly very helpful for mental health.
Yeah.
So people really increasingly realise that, you know, when they're spending so long at work, they actually need this to be purposeful.
Yeah.
And sort of sense, look for some kind of meaning in their work. And I would say that, as a gross generalisation, research shows that women are driven a lot more by purpose. Mm. And so then coming on to the area of gender equality, I wonder whether purposefulness in work might actually help increase the balance of gender equality.
Yeah.
Because women are suddenly a lot more motivated to sort of step up.
Yeah.
and rise to the challenge.
Mm.
I'm a founding member of very new non-profit that we've just formed called 513. So SDG 5, which
okay.
is gender equality, and SDG 13, which is climate action. And it's around how can we enable more women to be involved in tackling climate change.
Yeah.
Partly because historically, the challenge around climate is that they're often very technical roles.
Mm.
And historically, girls don't really study STEM subjects. And so we have a shortage of women in
yeah.
these kind of subjects mm. to be able to tackle them. But again, I think that increasingly this sort of sense of purpose and this
yeah.
drive to just be involved in climate action,
yeah.
I think is a really helpful driver to be able
Absolutely.
To balance gender.
And, you know, again, like I said, for gross generalisation, but I generally find my interactions, a lot of my customer base, clients, those who are leading sustainability are generally females within the industry. I probably know two or three CSR or sustainability managers that are men. So it's great to see that shift, and I can see the correlation between, you know, in businesses where females are driving that forward. So it's definitely happening.
Mm. It reminds me of was it Kennedy who was traveling, who was walking through the NASA space station and asking everyone what their job was,
mm.
and then the cleaner said, you know, I'm putting people on the moon. And I was sort of thinking of your factory and the gender balance, and I could
yeah.
imagine, you know, you could actually attract a better gender balance
yeah.
through this, because actually you're not working in a factory, you're helping reduce
Absolutely.
You know the problem of plastic in the world.
Definitely. When you have a clear purpose and you know that you're operating in a win-win mindset, win-win mentality, that it's a greater good for all, I think naturally that will attract the best human beings to that, regardless of gender.
The space that you work in has got incredible potential to attract.
I agree.
Very passionate.
Definitely. We've got huge potential. And ultimately, I think we're really fortunate with plastics recycling, especially PET plastics recycling, is that material impacts every single person. And therefore, we have such a plethora of people that we can talk to who all get what we're doing. Sometimes it's the educational part of, well, this is what we're trying to do, or this is our goal. Whereas here, it's something that affects all of us. We all use it in some form. Some of us, and we can all make a difference to it. So we're very lucky in that respect.
Because plastic, it affects everyone. There seems to be this newfound interest in green investments, you know, over the last sort of decade, I suppose. Liv, is it interesting to look back and see how, you know, how far we've come from the days of Swampy, when people used to sort of laugh at people up trees, and where we are today?
Absolutely. It's been a huge, huge shift. And I remember at university being sort of called the bag lady, because I was the only person who would ever reuse my plastic bags, and I still just proudly did it. Maybe not proudly, but I still just still did it. So there has been a huge increase. What's interesting for me is that I think this is really, really pivotal time, and I can't say that for sure I feel this trend is going to continue. What I can say is I was an HR manager in Goldman Sachs in 2008, and I remember being quite excited about the crash, thinking, this is brilliant, this is a time for change, everything is going to turn around, and nothing changed. And this time I'm absolutely determined that we don't just sort of sit back and assume that things are going to change. And I think it's up to the likes of us in this place, hopefully the listeners as well, to actually make sure that this does not drop down the agenda. I think this is a perfect time that everyone is listening, everyone cares, there's ability to take action, but unless we are there to inspire people with the solutions that people can adopt in the entire supply chain, both from a sort of systemic and a cultural perspective, I think, you know, we should never be complacent in thinking that this is just going to happen. But I think this is the perfect opportunity to really ensure that this growth continues.
There's a lot of greenwashing going on. People talk about greenwashing a lot at the moment. What more needs to be done to ensure investors are truly investing in something sustainable and environmentally good?
I think at that level, it's really about relying on putting the right framework in place from a policy and ratings agency, and, you know, creating tools of sort of genuine impact measurement. So you can't, you know, consumers are only have a limited amount of information, and it's not their fault often if they just, you know, they're given such small information that they can't really sort of make those informed decisions. But I would say it's the people like me, when I'm judging which businesses can come onto Seedtribe, which ones are truly impactful or not. And that's actually about asking the right questions. It's really about sort of digging a little bit deeper beyond, you know, how they position themselves, and asking about the sort of true impact, both from the sort of supply chain and then the end result perspective, so in the entire ecosystem. So it's complex. There isn't one solution fits all, and the thing is that you know, each solution being provided sits in its entire ecosystem that requires some kind of knowledge. So I would say that each decision does need some research in order to really sort of dig behind the scenes and ask the right questions. But that does require good frameworks with policies, with ratings agencies and systems to sort of ask at that holistic level rather than a cursory yes, no kind of questioning.
Sure. Ahmed, tell us a bit about Enviro and your journey so far.
So we've had quite a fascinating journey over the time. I think one thing that has been consistent is advocates like Liv, who have supported the journey from the outset, who understood that this, you know, that green investments, social impact, these are acorns that grow into oak trees, and they need nurturing and they take time. In terms of our journey, we're now very fortunate that there's the plastics packaging tax, which is going live next year. So therefore, it is a mandatory requirement to use recycled material, and no longer a passion-driven agenda from an organisation, or an organisation who is looking to, you know, create market share by inspiring consumers that they are a green brand. So, and those brands are great, and I really respect them because they've supported our journey. But finally, we've got legislation to support this business to say, despite, and also that legislation takes away my comparison to oil price. Well, what happens to oil price? What if oil price crashes? And I'm done to sick to death of that conversation, because it's no longer a comparison between recycled material and what happens within the oil industry. So there's been huge changes, but they've taken time. But at the same time, there's been a lot more awareness, so consumers are more aware, but there's still a lot of work to be done, because the challenge we still have is we still have no proper legislation on the industry. So we've got the legislation on the plastics packaging tax, but waste operators can still send their waste abroad. And yes, we've got India blocking it, we've got China blocked it, Turkey, but it still somehow leaves our shores. And that is so frustrating for me. Why are we palming off our waste when we have got one of the most powerful economies globally? And why can we not have the facilities to do that? And that's finally been recognized by our major institutional investors. And we're looking to really fast track that process over the next 2-3 years to be able to make sure that England and the rest of the United Kingdom actually recycles its waste at home, on home shores, and we can live and breathe a circular economy. And we need to more and more, because we're an island. You know, we are offshore compared to the rest of Europe, which has interconnectivity. So any transport that we have to get rid of waste is far more impactful than a country in Europe, because we've got both rail and the seas to cover. So there's been a lot of change, but there's a lot more to go.
I was really struck when we met years ago, Ahmed, and you were telling me about how the recycling plants in the UK had closed because of the oil price reducing. And, you know, it relies on passionate individuals like you who actually just go beyond that and take the plunge before any legislation is created and have that vision of the future, which is just to refuse to believe that we can see a future, you know, we can continue replicating what we're currently doing at the moment. And kudos to you to have that incredible drive and such a tough industry.
Thank you.
You know, you're essentially challenging the oil industry and the whole plastics and packaging industry. And, you know, I'm absolutely thrilled that it's paid off. But it does rely on outliers like you to really just have that foresight to know that this cannot continue as it is and create solutions that do inspire change.
And, you know, it's so, because it's such a tough journey, it's so important to have that right support network, people like yourself who've just believe and understand that there will be a solution and we will get to a solution. And that just raises the vibration, it raises the energy, it raises the awareness that everybody then ultimately collaborates. And it's great that everyone we've spoken to has said, absolutely, this is needed. And that just keeps us going because we've got so many challenges. And it just keeps you going to say, right, we will get through. And the next thing is the whole deposit return scheme. It's, we really need to get that moving and make sure it's successful, because a deposit return scheme can resolve so many problems financially for people who are from low-income families. If we can get a 20 to 25 pence rebate, that adds up to quite a lot of money for people. If we, you know, I'd love to be able to use a deposit return scheme to help with homeless people. I have a huge sense of guilt when I walk past someone who's selling a big issue. I don't carry cash anymore. We're in a cashless society, so therefore cashless society creates bigger problems for people who are trying to actually rehabilitate their lives. And that's the next stage now, is infrastructure is being put in, but bringing all the stakeholders together, the missing piece is the deposit return scheme. I'm really pleased that the Scottish Government have taken that leap forward, and I hope the English Government fast-track this process as well.
COP26, perfect timing.
Yeah, absolutely. Ultimately, we need to bring the UK, England back to being, you know, a thought leader, an industry leader, so we can take that to other parts of the world. And the great thing for us is with the Angel Investment Network and Seed Tribe is that I've got that network in, you know, Hong Kong, Brazil, Saudi, different places in the world, where once this is working, this is proven, and we can put our hand on our heart and say, we are circular economy, we recycle our waste, we can take that model to other governments and say, it's proven here. And we have a network established already because of programs and networks that people that live have created for us.
And your technology and solution is universal. So that's what's really wonderful. You know,
absolutely.
It's just who can provide the best solution, and it's cross-border, which is fantastic.
You mentioned about leadership and wanting the UK to sort of be thought of as a leader in this space. How important is COP going to be? How much of a focus should COP have on recycling?
I really, really hope that, because it's Scotland and they are really, you know, the sort of most progressive of the countries in the UK to look from in their environmental policies and actually their actual carbon emissions. I believe they're carbon neutral or close to. I would be very upset if I didn't see, you know, sort of reused, recycled, upcycled cutlery, crockery, etc., and recycling schemes there. I would have thought that this is the perfect opportunity to create a sort of microcosm of what it looks like to be zero waste and to actually operate something incredibly uniting and inspiring and forward-thinking while living within our means.
I agree. I hope COP 26 is a zero waste event, and people attending it and watching and witnessing it can see that you can achieve zero waste. I think the problem with talking about carbon and carbon tax and carbon reduction, it goes over most people's heads because they can't see it, it's not tangible, and we have to keep things simple. Sustainability is, the simpler you keep it, the more you can say, do you know that this simple action is going to have this impact and this is a change? And if you can make this change, this is how it's going to make a difference in the future. People get that. Talking about strategizing about blue sky technologies and everything else is great, but what we need is an immediate solution. And recycling is something that can make an immediate difference. I fully support carbon and carbon tax, but to an everyday member of society, it goes over their head. And as a sustainability specialist, it goes over my head half the time. So I'm, someone who's in the industry is grasping the concept. Somebody who's not in the industry, I can only imagine what they would be thinking. And therefore, if it's not hitting home, how much of an impact is it going to have? So, like Liv, I agree that if COP26 can be an example of this is a zero waste event, it should resonate, and they need to focus on recycling because that's an immediate way we can tackle climate change.
Liv Ahmed, thank you very much for joining me. Maybe we'll catch up after COP and we can see how successful it was.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
For more information and podcasts, go to www.enviro.co.uk.